Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 148. I am Steve Litchfield, comparing this week, and with me in Sussex I have...
Rafe Blanford, and Happy New Year from me as well. It's going to be a very exciting 2011, so we'll look forward to sharing all the news with you on the podcast here.
Yes, and further north in Hull we have...
David Gilson. Happy New Year, everybody, and I hope you all got some good toys over Christmas.
And up near the Arctic Circle we have...
New Year's... Spent. Hello, happy New Year. I'm fine. I'm better. I'm over it. I'm honest.
That's what Hogmanay does to you. Does to your brain. And we have some items of news. We also have our highlights of 2010, our predictions for 2011. But kicking off, CES Consumer Electronics Show is in Las Vegas this week as we record the show. You've been picking up some comments about a bit of Nokia hardware, and that's surprising for an American show.
It was, yes. It's a subtle thing because CES is a sort of my toy is bigger than your toy stuff. And, you know, everybody's talking about web TVs and tablets and such. Like, in one comment from a couple of the reporters was just basically, got my N8, really glad I've got the onboard photo editing. And there's one or two other people that are also just using it to edit videos quickly from the show floor on the Nokia N8. And what intrigues me is they're looking at all this advanced technology and things that can really help people. Yet they've all just kind of went, oh, this sort of grudging respect from American journalists of what they've got in their pocket in the Nokia N8. It's actually really useful for them on the floor, and they don't need to get near to a computer or something to sync up or anything like that. And I just love that contrast of it's right in front of you and they've missed it.
Absolutely, Ewan. I think the other interesting thing about CES is we've had a couple of comments come in, some, you know, why aren't Nokia announcing things? Well, partly that's about announcing things when suited, but I think it's probably worth reminding listeners that CES is a very US-centric show, and while a lot of gadgets do get announced, I think it's probably fair to say the focus is on the US market rather than anything else. And there have been some really interesting announcements. I don't know what the pick of the rest of the team would be, but the Motorola Atrix caught my eye in terms of a way of plugging your phone into a dock and making it appear on a TV, act as a computer, and similarly with a laptop, sort of a Folio or Redfly Plus type concept. And there's been plenty of others. You know, I think the other big trend was, you know, 4G started getting mentioned, and they'll probably send some people howling for the hills when it's WiMAX, but LTE is starting to come in the US. It looks like the US is going to get a bit of a lead over Europe in some areas for LTE. There are, of course, LTE implementations in a couple of European countries, but certainly not continent-wide, as I think we'll be seeing in the US before too long. But other than that, I think the trend will continue to be big Android screen phones, and with not a lot of variation on the design. It was sort of big bits of black plastic with big screens, or, you know, black metallics around. So in one sense, I was a bit disappointed not to see anything more innovative come out, but there are some weird and wacky ones in the corner, particularly a Thai company that escapes my name produced an interesting looking Android device. We'll put some more in the show notes. But just to turn it back on to Steve, was there anything that caught your eye at CES in particular, Steve?
The ever increasing screen sizes. Yes, they were all a bit bland in terms of form factor. That's one of the areas where, well, I would have said Nokia scores, but then we've had the C601, the C7, the N8, all of which are touchscreen slabs. So I would have seen more variety, more form factors from all the manufacturers across the whole world. But it was exciting to see the dual core devices, hopefully with not too poor battery life. It's good to see that Atrix, as you said. Yes, I think it's just evolution across the board. There's a big piece about innovations in my N8 review on All About Symbian, if you want to look back, listeners, from the last couple of weeks of 2010. And just looking down that list of innovations, it's still apparent that Nokia have the lead in quite a few areas, and that's not always acknowledged. Yes, there are some innovations in terms of screen size, screen contrast, which, of course, Nokia can match with CBD. There's the processor speeds, the dual cores. There's stuff happening across the board. As ever, there's a big divide there, I think, between what the Americans are doing and what the Finns are doing.
Absolutely. And catching my eye was, I think it was Sony Ericsson's Arc Reality display. And I wondered how many more wacky adjectives could be shoehorned into the screen race. I mean, we've had the Retina display and everything else. And even Nokia got in the act with a clear back display, which I suppose does have the advantage of being rather descriptive as to what it does. But yeah. I have to say, a lot of that marketing gimmick, some marketing speak passes me by. And it's what it's like to use in the real world. Of course, it's probably also worth mentioning that we'll see a whole bunch more things at MWC, and we'll be reporting from you live, or at least I will be. I'm just sorting out the details for that now. And so there's plenty more to come.
I'm absolutely not complaining, Rafe, about the screen technologies and innovations, because I've been ranting for years about you can't read these screens outdoors in the sunlight, and all of a sudden we've got every manufacturer, apart from HTC, scrambling to produce their own magic retina, CBD, IPS, wonderful display that has high contrast indoors and out. So it's good news all round, I think.
Oh, absolutely. It was wonderful to see them. I just get rather upset by the references to world-breaking and world-beating all the time. But yeah, as you say, it's great to see that. I think the other big thing to come out of CES was increasingly, we've talked about this before, the merger between the different types of consumer electronics, where there's a distinction between PCs and phones and tablets. It's sort of all merging together into one. And you know, I think probably the biggest typifier of that was Microsoft's announcement that Windows would be running on ARM chipsets, and also that many of Windows or Microsoft's partners are sort of looking at other operating systems for their mobile products, and a lot of that's around Android, but there are other activities as well. But as I say, CES has now come and gone, really. I guess we look forward now to MWC, where I expect to see a lot more European-focused and sort of world-focused announcements, and no doubt Nokia will play their part there as well. But
yeah, I think some things that have caught my ear as I've been listening about CES is we're seeing a trend for ever more powerful GPUs going into phones. I think the idea is to get some like 3D gaming performance out of handsets. And also NVIDIA made an announcement that they're going to work with ARM to make an ARM-based processor. And that's interesting as well from the Windows point of view, that I think Windows 8 is going to be ARM compatible as well, so it'd be interesting to see what we get in the mobile field in the next 18 months out of this.
Absolutely, the silicon is continuing to develop, and as Steve mentioned, the trend of dual cores coming in, of which I'm sure we'll be hearing much more and debating about the levels of effectiveness and how important different bits of software are and making use of that. So lots more to come on that front. Ewan, have you got any thoughts on CES?
Well, yeah, the general one is I just wonder how long CES can continue. I mean, it is a huge show. Everybody's got to go out there. It's incredibly expensive for all the journalists to cover. And a lot of the big names don't turn up. I mean, there's good stuff that comes out of there. For some reason, I'm loving the fact that Kenmore have a bundle of kitchen appliances on show that interface with the iPhone. I just think that's a fantastic idea. And we finally get the internet-connected fridge, and it's on display at Las Vegas just after Christmas. But these big trade shows, I mean, CES is huge. I mean, MWC is going to be absolutely chock-full of people this year. And yet, you see the big players like Nokia, like Apple, like Google to a certain extent as well, kind of pulling back and doing the announcements on their own and in separate events. I mean, Nokia famously last year didn't really attend MWC. They just ran an event in the hospital down the road. So I wonder how long these mega conferences are going to continue with this lovely connected world.
Yeah, we shall see. Certainly it was too expensive for any of us to go across. Although I know you, and you do take in a fair number of American conferences in your world travels. One of the things that Nokia was showing off at CES, one of the few things, was their new big screen technology, which we have mentioned. But Rafe, you've actually been trying this in your home with your new HDMI TV that you got for Christmas.
That's right, the Nokia big screen, which is available from Nokia Beta Labs. It's another one of these concepts coming out of Beta Labs. It looks like this one will actually result in a sort of commercial deployment. I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's built into future Nokia phones with HDMI out. And what it does really is provides an optimized UI for when you're viewing on a TV or some other big screen, either HDMI out. Because if you think about it, what happens normally with a TV out, regardless of whether it's a TV out cable or HDMI out cable, it just mirrors what's being shown on the phone itself, and so you see the same UI. You do actually see 720p video and photos, but that's a customization that you only see in the sort of the gallery application. By contrast, this Nokia big screen gives you a completely new UI, and it looks pretty much like a standard media center UI with a basic menu and sort of pretty graphics and transitions as you pop between the various things. And it works for viewing photos, viewing videos, as well as listening to music. So you can basically turn your phone into a optimized, I would say, media center, whereas before it could be a media center, but you're a bit stuck on the phone UI. So it does make it hugely easier to use, particularly if you're handing the device over to someone who's not familiar with the Symbian operating system. What happens is the N8 itself has a little sort of D-pad effectively appear on it, and it's up, down, left and right, OK and home, and those are all the controls you really need. As a result, you know, you can flick through photos much more easily. And as a bonus, everything is being displayed at 720p HD resolution as opposed to the standard 640 by 360, which is upscaled usually. So I think this is a really clever idea, and I'm sure we're going to see much more of this. You know, there's some hints of this really at CES. And you can obviously see this could be taken significantly further. But what it really does, in my mind, is sort of makes better use of the existing screens around the home. We've talked about this a lot already in the past and sort of said this is a big trend to come. And, you know, you can see a similar thing happening with terminal mode, which is Nokia's way of integrating phone into cars, intended to be an open standard, got various car manufacturers and many other accessory makers on board, whereby, you know, you'll plug your phone in, a screen on the dashboard will be customized with a UI that's suited to driving, i.e. less key presses, you know, controls on the driving wheel, etc., etc. So the big screen works in the same way, but I mean, I think just as a simple implementation, and as I say, this is entirely driven by software, and you know, having a different UI on the phone and a different UI on the TV makes an enormous amount of sense, and you know, works very well, very cleanly. There are a couple of nice extras in this software which are a hint at the directions you might go in the future, and clearly you can go beyond just media playback, but they've added support for subtitles and video, great, you know, if you're in a loud environment or indeed is an accessibility thing, but they've also added lyric support to the music player, and so that means you can effectively turn your phone into a karaoke machine. All you'd then need was the microphone, although I guess in the case of some people singing, you probably don't want the microphone. It all works very well. As I say, one of the nice touches is that when you plug in the HDMI cable, it starts automatically, and so it really does feel like a separate UI rather than an application you have to go and start. So it's all very intuitive and easy to use. So a big thumbs up from me, and as I say, I'm sure this is going to become a standard feature on the HDMI out capable phones before too long.
And yeah, for all those people wanting a new Symbian UI, it's here. And you can use a Nintendo Wii One remote control thingy as well.
Yeah, have to carry that 40-inch HDMI TV around with you.
That's right. Ewan does make a good point there. You can use a Nintendo Wiimote with it, which is obviously a bit more convenient. You're not tied to the length of your HDMI cable. You can also use a Bluetooth keyboard with it, or indeed any other HID device. And that really just speaks towards the flexibility of the platform in terms of being able to use almost any Bluetooth device. So it will work with a mouse, it will work with a keyboard as well. I'd say a keyboard and the Wiimote are probably the most intuitive and easy to use, because you can just use the arrow controls. But you know, as a way of sort of sitting back on the sofa lazily browsing through photos, or I think really for watching HD content that you capture on it, it's very hard to beat that implementation.
I can feel how many gadgets can you connect to your Nokia smartphone competition coming on, but we should
indeed.
And I'm just wishing that we could use the Wiimote with Angry Birds.
There you go.
Actually, speaking of Angry Birds, they've released the board game at CES as well. Just thought I'd throw that one in.
Okay, there's one for Rafe to buy the team for a get-together. Other item of news, very quickly, but very interestingly, Skype have made an interesting acquisition. You and you've got the details. Any analysis?
Yeah, analysis and numbers and company names as well. Skype have acquired Quik, which is a video streaming service for the mobile platforms, for $150 million. Now, there's no news if that's shares or cash or preferentials or buyouts or earnings enough, right? But that's a big success. And I mean, Skype has been on a great hockey stick graph throughout most of 2010. They started with about 500,000 users this time last year. They signed deals with Sprint, T-Mobile, and so on. So Quik eventually ended up with 5 million users at the end of the year. Now, Skype, of course, great for IM, has a little bit of video in there as well. But one of the things that Quik is known for, of course, is just almost ad hoc broadcasting from your phone. People can go to you start recording something, at the same time it's streamed up to the Quake website, message goes out to all your friends on Twitter and Facebook, and they can literally see what you're seeing. I always remember the analogy we used describing Quake back when it first came out was it was like having an entire TV van in your pocket, which made it incredibly, incredibly easy to use. And you know, Skype's on an acquisition speed. They're increasing video. It's already the default choice on Android. It's on the handsets now as well for Symbian as well. This is a good synergy, and they're both doing similar things, but not quite the same. So there's not a sort of crossover in terms of technology. It's complementary technology. This, I think, is going to be a smart move for Skype. The question, of course, is going to be how does a big company like Skype integrate a small company like Quake and still retain Quake's distinctiveness? And that remains to be seen. But at the moment, it smiles all round, and congratulations to Quake.
I think I'd agree. It's definitely a synergy there. They both want to enable people to be sending out video from their mobile devices. I was just wondering what everyone else thinks here. It's like, do you think the purchase is mainly for buying up the patents so that Skype can take advantage of Quick's technology, or what about the potential for Skype to fold in Quick's functionality so that you just have Skype on your phone and you either make a call to somebody else, to a group of people, or to the whole world at once?
Let me take the patent question first. Skype is already deep in patent wars with other companies and licensing and trying to keep people inside the Skype application. So I certainly think that the entire profile of Quick will be part of that. Patents are only worth what the lawyers that you can afford, and Skype can afford much better lawyers than Quick can on its own. So I suspect that would be a part of it. In terms of bundling up the applications and stuff, that's... Rafe, you've probably got some views on that one. I know you've looked at it previously as well.
Yes, no, I think Skype could potentially add in the Quick functionality, and it'll be interesting to see where they keep Quick going as a standalone entity. I think it makes a lot of sense because, as you suggest there are, you know, similarities, and David, when we were talking about this earlier, suggested that you know, in Skype you could have an option to send video to someone you're already calling or send it out to the web, and I think that's got quite a bit of potential. But I do feel probably the main reasons behind this purchase were about getting the technology and the team behind it, optimizing sending video over wireless, over mobile networks. And if you think about it, the sort of difference between sending a video chat and sending a quick video direct out into live streaming are very small indeed. You know, it's the same kind of technology, you know, it's compression, optimizing video frame rates, that kind of thing, and doing it all on the phone. And, you know, Quick have built up a large mobile team. You know, they're basically mobile focused, whereas Skype is coming from the other side. They're desktop focused, and I think their mobile efforts thus far have been a bit lackluster, and very much so on the video calling side of things. You know, with FaceTime coming out from Apple, and Quick actually did something similar on their Android client. I think that's why Skype have bought them. They want to get a leg up in that particular area. But I do hope, you know, as someone who uses Quick, you know, that they will maintain the sort of existing servers as well. But I think it's really about optimizing and building a better mobile video, you know, functionality on Skype itself.
This is just another thought as well. I mean, sure, Skype want to defend themselves in the patent wars. It's just it's like 3D TV and the internet connected fridge. Video calls is something we keep coming back to. I mean, Apple are doing it with FaceTime, but video calls is something that has been on the go. Even back when we had like cathode ray black and white TVs, people were fantasizing about it. And it's just something that's never caught on. Do we really want to be looking down a camera all the time when we talk to someone?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. There's certainly skepticism about it. And if ever there's been a technology that's taken a while to mature, it's video calling. But, you know, Skype have enjoyed a certain amount of, you know, they've captured the market for sort of basically dad away or parents away, calling back to the children. Outside of that immediate family connection, I don't really see video calling becoming an everyday thing. But I really see it as a way of sharing presence, if you like, within a family unit or maybe very close friends. You know, the idea that, you know, you can get that extra level of sense, but... So I sort of suggest that it's not video calling is a bit of a misnomer in a way. I would prefer to call it video presence, and it just happens to involve communication.
Yeah, it should be noted that The use case of reuniting family members across a distance, that tends to be done actually within a home or within a building where you've actually got Wi-Fi and desktops. The mobile use case, the reason it hasn't really taken off is because when you're mobile, you're running for a bus, out in the shops, whatever, you really do not want video calling at that moment. And so I'm like David, I'm sceptical here.
Yeah, well, I think the mobile's a fair point, but I think we're sort of heading towards a way where everything's done on the mobile phone, so having that functionality in mobile makes sense, especially if you're, say, a travelling businessman, you know, you don't necessarily have the equipment sitting in your hotel room or your office or whatever. And so I think mobile will be an important element of it.
Yeah, and of course, as screens get larger, then these smartphones, you know, up to 4 inches, 4.3 inches, then these screens and these smartphones do become pretty good little mobile computers that you can use for just this sort of use case, as you say, not using a laptop or a desktop, but just using your smartphone as your computer when away from home.
And you plug it into the TV or the monitor or whatever else, you know, it's not going to be too long before plugging things into a screen will become extinct. It will be done wirelessly. You know, you imagine arriving in your hotel room and, you know, you just switch on the TV and you can immediately be having, you know, tea with your family because, you know, it's all done automatically over Skype. And that's what I mean by kind of the remote presence kind of thing rather than a discrete video call as such. So I think it's an area to watch. But yes, I have a healthy amount of scepticism about it too.
Let's remember we've been talking about this and seeing it on film for a long time. I remembered Leonard Rossiter being at the end of a video call in 2001 when it was filmed back in 1968. Let's be honest, video is sexy, video gets in the numbers, but most of the time audio is sufficient. We don't do an All But Symbian Video Insight podcast, it wouldn't add to it. Most of the time our audio chats are fine, but there are sometimes when video is really needed, and the advantage of Quick and Skype, which I think is what this all boils down to, is when you need video, you know it's going to work, but most of the time you don't actually need it.
Yeah. We want to get to this highlights and predictions. So we'll just run through a couple of other news stories very, very quickly. Ovi Suite 3.0 has been formally released. It's actually released on the very last day of 2010. So I guess Nokia had some contracts on where you must hit your target, otherwise you don't get your bonus. It's out of beta into production code. It's a 73 megabyte download, which shouldn't be any problem on modern broadband connections. Just use check for updates in your existing Ovi Suite or even your old PC Suite, and you'll get the download. The main updates are to the music and maps modules, but there's a bit of a facelift to the whole thing. It's actually quite impressive. If you come to it fresh, you'd think, well, this is quite slick. This is certainly slicker than Apple's iTunes. My main grumble with it, as always, is that there are a lot of background tasks that you're not really aware of what's going on. So you'd start up Ovi Suite, and you go onto the menus, you start doing stuff, and it'll say, please wait. Ovi Suite is busy. You think, doing what? You come back 10 minutes later. Please wait. It's busy. And that there's, I wish Nokia would have little progress bars saying syncing contacts, scanning your photos. You knew what was going on. But that grumble aside, it's a pretty good facelift. There are a number of major improvements over the old version 2.2 Ovi Suite. And I would even argue it is an update now for PC Suite. So I'm hoping Mr. Spence up in Edinburgh actually gives us one a chance. I think it's worth giving a trial now.
Nokia PC Suite still works as long as you switch the application on before you connect the phone. No, let's not get me started. We're running through this quickly, but I just want basic PC Suite. I don't want all the big bloat of Ovi. Just give me the thing that works. I just have to hack it.
Well, just to say, I switched to Ovi Suite 3, and I'm really enjoying the experience. It's all very easy to use.
And my PC broke.
It's all very easy to use and well connected. However, I would say I think the experience you have with Ovi Suite will probably be directly correlated to how powerful your computer is. And it's still, you know, a bit sluggish on the older computers. Indeed, the same can be said of PC Suite. But I think PC Suite probably is just slightly less resource hungry. But if you've got a PC that can hack it, I would thoroughly recommend upgrading to Ovi Suite 3 because it is a big step up from 2.2.
Rafe. And I will test it when they release a version for Ubuntu.
Rafe.
Yes.
Can I have a new PC?
You knew that was coming, didn't you?
I did, yes. And I'm going to carefully not answer the question.
I'm sure Rafe's got an old 386 he can send you. Moving on quickly. Point and Find, which is a little utility that's bit Nokia, put it through Beta Labs. Over a year now ago now, has now been archived from Beta Labs, but it's apparently going to reappear in Ovi Maps and maybe the search function within Maps. Rafe, you did try the old version. How long do you think it'll be before this appears?
Well, Nokia is saying this will start to merge into some of the other experiences they put it, maps and search being the obvious candidate, in the next few months. So I think look to see it starting to appear, you know, sometime in the first half of this year, really. How obvious it's going to be is open to debate. But I mean, both of the technologies within Point of Find, one of which was visual search, I point your camera at something and have it identify what it is, and augmented reality, which is essentially overlaying things on the screen, and then, you know, to connect the digital and the physical worlds, if you like, have a lot of potential in both search and mapping. I use the original application Point and Find, and for example, one of the use cases that you had, you could point at a film poster and it would identify the film poster, what film it was. It would give you a review of it, offer to let you watch the trailer. It would then tell you where your nearest cinema was, offer to get you there, as well as, you know, potentially book tickets as well. And obviously how good this kind of service is depends on how well it is connected to all the other bits that kind of go with it. So the technologies itself is one thing, and what Point of Find never really managed to do was sort of, you know, finish it off by having all the connecting elements. So the underlying technology was very impressive and quite rightly won some innovation awards, but really this is not something you have in a standalone application, as was the case with Point of Find. It is something that should be integrated into other things, and so putting it into maps or into search does make a lot of sense to me. But again, it will depend on how good the integration is, and, you know, I'll be hopeful that this will mature over time. And Nokia also hinted that they may make it available to third-party developers. I assume that'll be through the provision of some kind of service API. I think that could be very interesting if they get that right. But it's, you know, a lot of this augmented reality is very cool when you look at it, and, you know, quite fun to play with. But when it comes to day-to-day use, doesn't always, you know, hit the spot, if you see what I mean. And so by integrating that technology, yes, that's the right approach. But I still think it's going to be a while before all these sort of various connecting bits are there to make it a completely seamless experience. You know, to give the example of the film poster, you have to really have every cinema in it for it to make sense, and that's quite hard to do, you know, with the various chains, especially when you get as far as booking tickets, and then, you know, you have to have a mobile site that's suitable for booking tickets on and easy to use. Otherwise it's easier just to, you know, pick up the phone, turn up at the cinema, or go to your PC to do it. But, you know, that is the future. But it is, as so often the case, we talk about these future things, there's a lot of dots to connect together to make it work completely seamlessly. But you know, I'm glad to see this technology maturing, because obviously it's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, when we talk about these point and find type applications being the next big thing, we're not talking about next month, we're talking about next year or maybe the year after that. And certainly things like Google Goggles, which has been quite famous in the Android world, tries to do much of a similar thing. You point at an object, it tries to identify it, but the results back can be somewhat comical depending on the lighting conditions and the angle you're photographing it from and how niche the item you're photographing is. So I think we're a good couple of years away from it being really, really useful to the common man. Got about 10 minutes left on the podcast at most. Let's do our highlights of 2010, and if we have time, we'll do predictions. Otherwise, we'll leave that for the next podcast. So highlights of 2010, I'll go first, just that nobody nicks my highlight. I'm going to pick out Nokia's camera heroics with the N8. Damien Dinning, a good friend of ours, and his wonderful team, given the, if I may say, the lack of attention applied to some aspects of the Nokia's handsets over the last year or so, the sheer amount of detailed attention and concentration and focus that the N8 camera team put into the stills and the video capture and just about every aspect of the photography element of the N8 was nothing short of stunning. And I'm still being impressed by the N8. People are still being impressed by its output, both photo and video, across the world, really. And it really stands as a testament as to why you should buy this one device. And there was, a feature before Christmas, which Rafe can link to in the show notes, you know, why you'll look back in 10 years' time and be glad you had a Nokia N8. I still stand by that. Yes, there are other elements of the device which aren't spectacular, but for their camera heroics, I'm nominating Damien Dinning and his team. Ewan, do you want to go next with your highlight of 2010?
Yeah, I'm going to take two. One of them is the C601 just on its own. Nokia finally cracking the small pub phone. It's like an X6 on steroids. Okay, it doesn't have the 32 gig of storage, but it does have space for the memory card. It's small, it's powerful, it does 95% of what the larger phones do, and it's just a little tiny diminutive hero. And the fact that Nokia can take a base platform and make the N8 and the C601, the C7 and everything else around it, I just think is it shows where their strength is. And secondly, I've written down Angry Birds and Need for Speed, but in actual sense, it's the fact that Symbian 3 has shown people that applications can be made on Symbian, that you get applications that are just not only just as good as the other mobile handsets out there, but are identical and do the same. It's interesting that when I handed the C6 over to a friend of mine in December who does some game development at Edinburgh University, the first thing she did was load up Angry Birds. When I asked her why, it was because I could use it as reference, and she was able to compare that to exactly the same thing that was on Android and on iOS, yeah. And she came out smiling. So the fact that, you know, it's now proven that Symbian can fight in terms of code and facilities at the same level as everything else, I think that was a highlight. You know, that part of the developer story, the confidence that you can do big things, is finally there.
Yeah, thank you. David, your highlight.
I think my highlight was the journey that Symbian has gone on over the year. I mean, they started the Symbian Foundation and open sourcing before 2010, but the main highlights of the story did happen throughout last year. At first, we had the completion of the open sourcing, which was done impressively ahead of schedule. I had my concerns at the time about having a fractured environment similar to what we see in Android, because it was possible. And then as the year went on, we saw Samsung and Sony Ericsson dropping away from Symbian, and there just being no real reason for the Symbian Foundation to continue in the form it was. It's all kind of been like trying to throw a dinner party for a group of people who don't really have a lot in common. And then finally at the end of the year, Symbian, still kind of open source, has gone back to Nokia, and hopefully we'll see more focused development with Symbian going forwards now.
Yeah. Rafe, your highlight, please.
Well, I'm going to sort of pick out one general one, which really rounds up a lot of what you've been saying. That's to say the sort of arrival of Symbian 3. You know, it's the first big version of Symbian we've had for quite some time. And the impact it has, you know, it really has brought Symbian right up to date. Now, there'll be continuing arguments about, you know, where it stands, but there's, you know, clearly improvements to come. We expect them to happen throughout the rest of 2011. But in terms of the leap forward, Symbian 3 did make it an enormous difference. And part of that was around the hardware that came with it. But there's an awful lot there sitting under the hood that makes it an extremely capable and mature platform. And I don't think it always gets the credit for that. But that's kind of borne out by what you were saying about the N8 camera and what Ewan was saying about the C601. That was all backed up by Symbian 3. But if I'm going to pick out a single highlight, I think it's probably the move to Qt as the choice of development environment. I think it's smart because it's, you know, applied to both Symbian and Migo, and so it should make life easier for developers. And it also kind of addresses the grumble that we've been having for years and years about Symbian being too difficult to develop for. Now, a very good reason for Symbian C++ being the way it was, but it was time to update that, and the majority of applications will be able to be written more simply, more quickly, and more cleanly in Qt, and that will have a great impact on the ecosystem in general in the next 12 months. And the foundations were laid a couple of years ago, or a year, 2 years ago, with the acquisition of Trolltech. But it's really with the announcement, I guess, in sort of the October-November timeframe, that Qt would become the kind of the dominant way forward. And that sort of switch away from Symbian 4, which was starting to look like it might cause a lot of trouble, just a much clearer message that Nokia has brought out with Symbian 3, which really lays the foundations for the future. And it gives me more confidence than a lot of the announcements that have gone before. So I do feel strategically, at least, you know, the platform is now in the right position to develop going forward. A lot remains to be seen on the execution. But, you know, in a year which has been seeing massive growth for Android, which has seen the launch of Windows Phone 7 and, indeed, you know, other competitors coming, the continued rise of BlackBerry, of course, you know, iOS continues to develop with, you know, the iPad coming out. Symbian has sort of been, you know, rather rejected and, you know, ignored and said it's failing and it's dying. But I actually think it's, you know, strategically, it's better positioned now than it was, you know, a year, 2 years ago. And I think that's a very encouraging sign for the future. There's a lot of, you know, what may come. You know, mobile is notoriously unpredictable. But I think it's now a question of how the execution goes, not whether it will happen or not. And I think that's a big change. And that's why that's my particular highlight.
Yeah, well, yeah, that leads in nicely to our predictions for 2011, because a lot of what you just said was what I was going to introduce my prediction for. A lot of analysts have said that Android, which, I mean, there's a huge momentum behind it. If you look at all the cutting-edge handsets all launched at CES this week, every single one ran Android, for example. There is huge momentum, and of course it's also free to license, so actually about every manufacturer in the world, is apart from Nokia, is building a device on Android. But I think people still underestimate Symbian. They say, a lot of analysts say, Android is going to overtake Symbian as the top-selling smartphone OS in the world this year, in 2011. I don't think so. I've done my numbers, I've looked at my graphs, and I'm pretty confident in Symbian under Nokia's leadership this year. I think Symbian will stay ahead of Android, and I'm going to stick my neck on the line and say that Symbian will still lead Android worldwide, maybe by only a small margin, but it will lead it by the end of 2011. Where it goes in 2012, that's perhaps too far to predict at this time, but I'm putting my neck on the block. Symbian will stay ahead of Android. Ewan?
There we go. There, I've actually got that one down as well. Android to match Symbian's numbers per day. I think in 2011, we are going to see the point where the market will be shipping 1 million smartphones per day. And I think those numbers are going to be in the region of about 400,000 for Symbian, about 400,000 for Android, about 15s for Apple's iOS, and then everything else made up with BlackBerry's, Windows Phone 7 and such. Like, I think we're going to see a big uptick on all the platforms, and Android will have that. Android will now hit the fragmentation problem. I think that's a big issue. Symbian will suddenly look to be this sort of, you know, it is not quite one size fits all, but maybe just two or three sizes will fit everything. Whereas Android will be 200 or 300 sizes fit everything. So Android will actually now appear harder to develop for, even though there's bigger numbers. Rolling UI changes. I mean, we're not going to see Symbian 4 as such. It's just, we already know that. It's just going to see everything. Steve is going to complain about the Nokia E7 having not enough memory. Pretty confident. We'll put my head on the line for that one. And I think Rafe is going to be the first non-Etonian to win Just a Minute.
I'm not taking you up on that bet. David, your prediction for 2011?
My prediction is, I think we will hear an announcement that S60 5th edition is going to be retired. I still think we might see some more S60 3rd edition phones coming out, just for the low-end, like messenger-type phones and E-series devices and some C-series. But we may... I think they'll probably hang on just for form factor and cost, but with Symbian 3, I don't think there's any need for S60 5th edition anymore.
Yeah, I'll agree there. They've had, going back to an S60 3rd edition phone, I've been playing this week with the E72 and an E6, just trying my sim out in them and just giving them a day or so, just to compare with the new Symbian 3 phones. And yes, there are some really nice things about those form factors, but the actual software itself, the actual the functionality in the menus and the interface and the ease of use and the under-the-hood codecs, and just you can go on and on. There have been quite a lot of evolutionary changes up through the different versions of Symbian, and it's quite a wrench to go back to S60 3rd edition after Symbian 3. So yes, I think I agree with you. I think most of the new devices over about £200 will be Symbian 3 in one form or other. I am looking forward to, and this is me adding a second prediction, I am looking forward to something in the E72, E61 style form factor with a capacitive touchscreen, Symbian 3 in some shape or form, and a proper hardware QWERTY keyboard. I think that might be quite nice. And who knows, maybe that's already on the drawing board. Rafe, your prediction for 2011?
Well, we've already stolen some of the predictions, but I think people will actually be surprised that X60 3rd edition and 5th edition will continue to have legs. It's particularly in the lower end of the market. You know, we've still got the C503 to come in, for example. That's going to be one of the cheapest Symbian phones, and we're seeing the 5228 break new ground. So I think they'll be around for a while yet, and will make up significant shipment numbers simply because they're going to be the low-cost devices. But yes, we're inevitably going to see new Symbian 3 device, and I think it's a pretty good bet that we will see sort of a touchscreen successor to the E72 type form factor, as well as more to come. Notably, there's some gaps in the X series range as well, so I suspect we'll see a moderately high-end X series device before too long, and then we'll probably start to see some repeating numbers in terms of, you know, new Symbian devices in the second half of the year. I'd probably expect to see something in the camera department before the end of 2011. But I've also made a couple of other predictions already on the site, for example, about OviStore. That's going to break through the 1 billion download mark. I think it happened beginning of February, mid-February, probably be announced at MWC. And I think it might just break through 3 billion downloads by the end of the year. It sort of depends on what happens to the growth rates. But OviStore, while it's not necessarily going to catch up with the competition, I think will certainly come of age and there'll be a lot more content in there and quite a lot of downloads going on, lots of purchases, to the extent that developers will, you know, start to look up and take it seriously. And you will hear it mentioned in the same breath as Android Marketplace and the Apple App Store by the end of the year. So looking more generally at the market, I don't actually think we're going to see massive changes that people sort of think is revolutionary. Sure, we're going to see the rise of dual cores and a lot of iterative changes, bigger screens and that kind of thing. NFC's been talked about as a big thing. That's been coming in, but I think we'll just see the start of that and people will probably be surprised by the slow progress that that has. I don't really expect to see massive things on the money side of things, for example. I think that's very hard to implement and it will be very limited when it does appear. The main things on NFC will be around pairing Bluetooth accessories and maybe tagging things on posters and things like that. So as I say, I think, you know, more the thing, but in one sense, that's what we've come to expect from mobile, an accelerating pace of change, but it's quite hard to really get something that stands out and surprises people. But I think if, you know, I was looking from maybe an outside Symbian point of view, for, you know, we look at it and study it often, but I think people will probably be surprised by the progress that Symbian makes this year, both in terms of new devices. There'll be some relatively high-end devices, maybe not at the very top end. That's going to be reserved for Nokia's MeeGo devices that, you know, of course, will be arriving in 2011. But I think devices along the lines of C7 and even, you know, the N8 may well come along and surprise people. And together with that, we're going to see really visible changes to Symbian, the platform, in terms of the way the UI works, some of the applications, some of the updates that happen there. You know, we've already been promised the first 50 updates as part of the kind of first update to Symbian 3. That's expected to appear in February. But we're going to see at least two more big updates before the end of the year, probably one in the summer and one towards the end of the year. And those are going to significantly change the look and the feel of Symbian, to the extent that people will, you know, start taking a fresh look at Symbian, and it may start to lose its sort of old and tired label and slow and clunky. And it will make a bit of a comeback. You know, I suspect that some of the bloggers and the analysts are still going to poo-poo it, but I suspect Symbian may surprise people by its sort of it continuing to have legs and continuing to sell well, as has already been suggested in some of the very early numbers we've seen around Symbian 3. So, you know, from a year where Symbian, I think, has suffered an awful lot from that, it's dead, it's dying in 2010, I think we'll see, you know, a bit more optimism about it in 2011. I think that'll be a nice thing to see.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're running right out of time, guys. Thank you for the podcast. Thank you for listening if you're out there. Goodbye in Hull from...
David Gilson, bye everyone.
And a goodbye in Edinburgh from...
Ewan Spence, goodbye.
And a goodbye in Sussex from...
Goodbye everybody from Rafe.
And a goodbye from me. Just a brief pointer. If you're used to finding out about me also and from my old 3Lib server, my 3Lib website, do note it's the server's being turned off next week. If you've got any links to me, then you have to change your bookmarks. It's now stevelitchfield.com, as it sounds. Don't forget the T in Litchfield. Otherwise, you won't find my personal website. Or don't forget all about symbian.com. The AAS account on Twitter will give you all the news you need. But for now, goodbye. Thank you for listening.